I first of all, I would like to thank the organizers to make this arrangement. So today I will briefly report on the work that I did with the IAS group on independently analyzing the publicly available LIGO Virgo data searching for compact binary mergers. So I think our main motivation is, first of all, we really want to do an independent confirmation, as a group that is not part of LIGO. And second, we want to push as hard as we can to see how well we can do the statistics really precisely. And this is important to quantify the significance of the event, and by doing so we might be able to discover fainter events in the data. So here are the other people. Is there a point? Oh, here. Yeah, so these are the other people on the IAS team. So Burak and Teja are two postdocs at the IAS, and Matthias is a faculty at the institute, and then Javier is a student at Princeton who works closely with Matthias. So these are the two science runs that we analyzed. The data has been made public. So for the entire O1 and most of O2, we had only data from the two LIGO detectors. Only for the very last month of O2, we had Virgo data as well. So our pipeline is mainly based on the two LIGO detectors. So the first objective is to construct a template bank so that we can make sure that the interesting parameter space will not be left out. And the goal is to make the template bank as economic as possible. So here our approach is, I think it belongs to the category of so-called geometrical placement. So the basic idea is that, so up to some arbitrary amplitude and phase, which are controlled by external parameters, the shape of the waveform is determined by the intrinsic parameters. So in Fourier domain, you can write it as some amplitude and some phase. So the point is that both functions are very smooth functions of the frequency, and in particular, the phase is very important because if you it goes over many, many multiples of 2 pi. So if you mess up the phase by other unity radian, then the match is lost. So then basically the task is, can we construct a set of phase functions that it will basically include all possible phases. So our approach is basically define a set of bases, and you can define a metric that characterizes how different two phase functions are in terms of the match filtering signal to noise, in terms of the match filtering overlap. And you find that by doing so, then the coefficient you can take the differences in this coefficient and then add them in quadrature, and that gives you a measure of the distance. So this is this resembles the usual distance. So by doing that, then we find that you don't have to have an infinite set of bases. Instead, usually the leading 2, 3, or 4 bases are sufficient to cover the entire linear space. So then using this method, we construct our search bank. So one assumption of this method is that the amplitude function is uniform across the bank, and that is not a good approximation if you want to cover the entire mass range. So that is why we divide into many banks. And there's a second reason for doing so, which is the number of templates is very different in different banks. For example, in neutron star banks, you have hundreds of thousands of templates, and in black hole banks, you only have tens of templates. So if you don't want the very large look elsewhere effect to harm your black hole search, then it's better to define separate banks. And then as you can see that we have binary neutron star banks, neutron star black hole banks, and then black hole banks. Even within the black hole banks, we divide into several banks. Each one spans like a factor of two in the chirp mass. And then we do some check to make sure that these banks are effectual. So very quickly show the results of our black hole search, which is the part we have published. And so for the O1 search, we basically recovered all two events that LIGO confidently announced in the first place. And then this LVT, this trigger that was considered not very secure in the beginning, we confirmed it with fairly good false alarm rate. So we only set upper bound on the false alarm rate, which is less than like one in 20,000 O1 runs. And in addition, we find another interesting event. According to our calculation, the false alarm rate is one in 50 O1 runs. And then our best effort to compute the p-astro probability for being astrophysical origin gives 0.7. So then this event is interesting because it's fit by a fairly high chi-effective parameter. We also observe a very interesting phenomenon, which is if we first use the isotropic spin prior, which is adopted by LIGO then we find that the best fit solution actually lies outside the two sigma contours in all of these plots. So we tried a different prior, which is to say that since chi-effective is the phenomenological parameter that controls the waveform, let's make it flat. Then in this case, we find that the best fit, the measure, the chi-effective parameter is even closer to plus one. So this is an interesting trigger. This is the only one, only additional trigger that we found is significant. And then for the O2 results, we found that there are six triggers whose p astro is above 50%. So we choose to report these six. And among the six, three of them have very good false alarm rate, like better than once in a few hundred O2 runs. And p astro is better than 98%. So we think these three are pretty secure. And the other three, the p astro is above 50%, but the probability for being fake is also not negligible. So here are just some examples of the posteriors. So these two are the secure two of the secure events. You can see that they look like the population reviewed uncovered by LVC in the, before. The binary appears pretty symmetric, and the chi effective is consistent with being zero, and also the masses are pretty high. So these are the detector frame chirp masses. And for the third one, it's the same story pretty much. And then for the other three, some of them look like the existing population, but this one, chi effective, the peak is pretty negative, although zero is not that securely ruled out. So these events, whether or not they are real, it's up to it can be questioned because the p astro is not so high. Now, if we put everything on this plot, so the source frame total mass versus the chi effective parameters, then the LVC, previously reported LVC events in blue, and then the dark green, the three dark green points are the three secure detections, and then these, the others are the less secure ones. So you can see that apart from this one and this one, it's quite, distributed quite close to chi-effective equals zero, but there seems to be an interesting trend that if you go to more massive systems, then it seems that chi-effective is systematically more positive, although it's not very high. So this, whether or not this is a genuine feature or it's just a low number statistics, it remains to be seen. In the following, I'm going to just very briefly explain some of the details of this search. So some of the steps we developed our own ways to do the analysis, and this will be useful to compare what is being done by the LIGO-Virgo collaboration. So for the parameter estimation, it is in general very expensive if you evaluate the likelihood in the brute force way, because you have many frequencies that you have to sum over. So what we do is we realize that since when you estimate parameter, you're not going to explore very different waveforms anyway. So if you take any waveform that you are going to explore and divide by some fiducial waveform, the ratio is actually very smooth as a function of frequency. So you don't actually need millions of frequencies. You can just have a much fewer number of frequency beings, and for each being, you compute some kind of moments, and then the likelihood can be computed not from the string itself, but just derived from the moments. So, for example, this is this method applied to the neutron binary neutron star event, and instead of millions of frequencies, we only need 100 order 100 frequency beings. And then what this method supplies is an approximate answer for the likelihood, and what we can have good control over is the absolute error in the log likelihood, and that is what matters in parameter estimation. So now we get this working, and we apply it regularly in our analysis. Now we try to take an attitude to very aggressively reject bad seconds in the data. So this is something that is, as far as I understand, is a little bit different from LIGO-Virgo's philosophy. So imagine that we detect that some second has abnormal activity, and we don't trust that it's safe to include in analysis, then we just make a hole. So now, in order to avoid the creation of the hole, introduce artifacts in the neighboring seconds, and that could possibly contaminate the analysis here, we basically solve a linear algebra problem, make sure that such thing will never happen. So this is similar to, like, in painting the CMB map because of the galactic mask. And then there are also noise transients, what people call them glitches. So for glitches, we basically define some excess power detector. So by that, we look for certain ranges of frequencies, and if there's excess power, we flag it and we throw out the seconds. And then whenever we design a glitch detector, we also make sure that it will not reject any genuine signal that has signal to noise less than 30 in single detector. So this is being checked by injection. Now, there's a very important effect that we identify. I think some of the LIGO groups, they have also identified, which is usually when you quantify the significance of a trigger, you compute this match filtering score, and you need to insert a noise PSD. So this is assuming that the noise is Gaussian random and stationary. But what we found is that actually the assumption of stationary is not a good one. So here we plot the variance of the Z as the power spectrum, the temporal power spectrum for the variance of the Z. So if it's perfect Gaussian random noise, then what you see should be just the short noise or the sampling noise. But then you see that when you go to the time scale of a few seconds, you start to pick up this excess power. So this is just suggesting that the noise behavior is actually drifting over time. And this is very important because imagine that you make a distribution of the background. If it's perfect Gaussian noise, it should decay as, you know, e to the minus signal to noise square over 2. But now if you have some bad seconds that has excess noise activity, then you are overestimating the significance of the trigger. So that basically pollutes the tail. So we apply the correction as a function of time, and this helps us bring the distribution back to Gaussian as much as possible. And finally, we do this so-called vetoing. So once we find a trigger, it means that there's a good score, but we ask the question, if we chop up the signal into several chunks, then are we getting the expected signal to noise from each of the chunks? So this is the consistency test, and if it fails, we throw out this trigger. So again, we also, by doing injection, we make sure that every test of this sort will not have a false rejection rate larger than 1%. And then I think I'm going to quickly going over these slides. So how do we estimate the background? I think we take the approach of the PiCBC group in LIGO-Virgo collaboration, which is we make use of the fact that any genuine signal will not have a very long, we will not have a time delay longer than 10 milliseconds between two detectors. So if you slide by more than that, then you are creating basically backgrounds. Then what you can do is you basically create background events in this way, and then you plot them on this plot, so the signal to noise square in one detector versus the other. Now, the distribution, if it's perfect Gaussian noise, then it's straightforward to just take the sum of the two, and then you draw a line, and then you ask, you know, how many background events are beyond this line, and that gives you the false alarm probability. But this is complicated by the fact that the tail is always, at some point, you start to get polluted by glitches, so it no longer follows Gaussian distribution. So what we do is we basically define so-called ranking score. It is a remapping of the signal-to-noise ratio it's a remapping of the signal-to-noise ratio, and after you transform to the ranking score, you make sure that along each direction the distribution is an exponential distribution. And then if you believe that any noise cannot be correlated between the two detectors, then you're allowed to draw like straight lines. So in this way, we calculate our false alarm rate. And finally, we did some correction to the score, because all the previously mentioned steps, it is doing maximization of the amplitude and phase independently in each detector. And this is not making use of the fact that if an event is really coming from the sky, then there's some certain consistency relation between the time delay, the phase difference, and the amplitude ratio. So and how these numbers are correlated can be theoretically predicted. So you make use of this information and do some correction, and this helps us gain sensitivity. Okay, so I think these are the aforementioned steps are the most important steps that lead to our results. And finally, I will just very briefly mention some ongoing work we have not finished. So we are still working on the results for the binary neutron star and the neutron star black hole banks. It's more expensive because there are more templates. The number of templates is orders of magnitude more than heavy black holes. And the second thing is we also search for the so-called 1.5 detector events, because in some cases you can imagine that because of a unlucky sky localization, you have a good signal-to-noise ratio in one detector, but you don't, you have a very faint signal-to-noise ratio in the other detector. So because we could not afford to collect every trigger, we are going to miss this tiny parameter space. So we estimate that we should expect on average like one event from this little corner of the parameter space. So we did a search using a different method to calculate the false alarm rate, and because of the time limit, I'm just gonna show two of the, so we found two most significant triggers in living in this corner of the parameter space. So one looks like, in terms of the parameters, it looks like the sibling of this highly spinning trigger we found from O1, and the other event, it has very high component masses, and it has a moderately high and positive chi-effective parameter. So this resembles GW170729, which is this the heaviest event that LIGO reported in their O1-O2 catalog. So, but these are very preliminary results. I think some publication will come out soon. All right, so I will just skip this slide and leave time for questions.
What's the false alarm rate and the probability that they're astrophysical in nature for the last two that you have just shown?
These two.
Was it there? I didn't see it.
So the false alarm rate is calculated in a different way, in a different way compared to the other events, because it's you know, the nature is 1.5, so we cannot do this sliding thing. But the false alarm rate, I mean, if I define false, so I can define two probability. One is to say that if you believe these are fake, these are just random noise, what's the probability that you will have a 3 sigma counter signal in the other detector? And we found that for these two events, that probability is at the level of a few percent, so like 2-3%. But then there's a different question to ask, which is, if you believe these are real, what's the probability that you are so unlucky that one detector has a very loud noise and the other detector has almost nothing, like a little bit signal? And we did the calculation also using like some Monte Carlo, and we get a comparable answer. So then that means, that is why we cannot immediately declare these events, because you know, the hypothesis for gravitational waves, the probability is also low, so it's also at the few percent level. So basically, you have two hypotheses that both seem unlikely. But then the reason we still pick out these two is because these two, they are among the very few events that even have like a 3 sigma counterpart in the other detector. And second, these two, if you look at other triggers that looks like this, most of them, they have like chi effective equals minus one, and I think this is a very prominent feature of glitches, because, you know, basically whenever you have a few number of cycles, that gives you chi effective minus one. So we have seen tons of things like that, and all of them we can reject based on the fact that a single template might pick up like many, many such triggers. And these two, they do not seem to have a lot of like things similar to them. And finally, we also identify that in some cases, glitches can be well fit by a physical model, which is to say that the string, the h of t as a function of time, just for some reason undergoes a sudden abrupt jump. So it's like a step function. So we find that if we cook up this template, we can fit, in many cases, we can fit triggers that we believe are glitches very well. So we do this test for all the things on our list, and these two survive. So many others get killed. So in that sense, it's not obvious that these two are like fake, but on the other hand, they are kind of borderline. So we cannot like immediately declare them. So
Can I ask one more question?
I have two questions. Can you go back to the posteriors for the top three events from O2? So did these use the uniforming chi-effective prior, or are these isotropic chi-effective priors as well?
So these are using the flat chi-effective prior, but I think the results for using, so if you use isotropic prior, the results will be the same for, I think, the first five, because their posterior is peaking at zero.
Right.
So it doesn't really matter. It might make a little bit difference for this one, because it's
right.
You can see that it's favored there.
So second question is, how long does it take the relative binning parameter estimation method to converge on something like a 17.0817 BNS-like event?
So it depends on there are two ways of doing parameter estimation. One is the most general way, you put in all the extrinsic parameters, and I think that will take several hours or maybe half a day, something like that. The more hand-waving way of doing that is to this is possible for that event because it's so loud. It may not be a very good thing to do for fainter events, which is you just allow arbitrary amplitude and phase in every detector. You fit incoherently, and that is much faster. That it, on a single core, it might just take 15 minutes to converge. Yeah.
Hey, yeah, thanks. That was a really interesting talk, and this is really nice work, and it's really impressive what you've managed to do. Can you go back to the O1 result slide? There's one thing that I didn't quite understand there.
This one.
Yeah, so you say you put two numbers on here, a false alarm rate, which is 1 in 50 O1 runs, and a piastro of 0.7. I can't make that tally in my head, right? Let me just walk through this. So in O1, we saw 3 BBHs. So I would expect that any event with a false alarm rate of 3 per O1 run is going to have a piastro of about 0.5, right? 3 BBHs, 3 noise events that loud. So how do you go from something that's 1 in 50, which seems really significant, to a piastro of 0.7, which isn't that significant? Why is that piastro not 0.99?
I don't think that it's necessary that a good FAR necessarily means good piastro, because these are answering two questions, right? So FAR means that, forget about gravitational waves. You just ask the question, if you believe everything there is in the data is just Gaussian random noise, then what's the probability that you will produce such a thing just by chance? However, I think piastro is asking a different question. It's asking, if you believe that you only have two choices, one is that it's noise, the other is it's gravitational waves, then what is the relative ratio between one versus the other? So you can imagine that it's possible that the signal, it is unlikely to be noise, it is also unlikely to be whatever, to be coming from whatever astrophysical model you assume. Now, in that case, it would just imply that maybe your astrophysical model is not quite correct.
So what about this is unlikely then? I mean, what's making this piastro so small, or is there just some nomenclature sort of wording difference in how we normally talk about these things that I'm just missing here? Because it seems, the spin's a bit small, but it is in the...
So it might have something to do with the... because we are computing this thing based on... We calculate piastro. So let me go to this. Yeah, so we calculate piastro based on how many events we have already detected. So LIGO, Virgo have already detected. But then the thing is, we have to do this estimation bank by bank. So then I think what happens is that this trigger, because the chi-effective is high, so it's coming from a bank that is not like well populated by known events. So basically, if you put all the events here, some region there are many events, some region is like empty. So this event, because the inferred chi effective is high, it's like leaving, I think, so this is bank three, but it's like coming from, so bank three has some sub-banks in our language, and it's coming from an unpopular sub-bank because we have never detected any like chi effective that is high. Partly, yes.
Okay, one, time for one final question. So just curious, have you guys tried to do any like software injection and see like, if your inference on the chi effective is biased at all? I guess you mentioned that for massive systems, they tend to have like positive chi effective, but I think that, So have you guys are there like any like you know bias in the inference using your pipeline?
I'm not very sure what you're asking, but if you're asking like whether or not it's possible to have a so let's say the event is actually not spinning or have very low spin, but then when you do parameter estimation just because of noise, you infer a very high value. So that, I think, according to our like test, it's not likely.
It's more like for massive system, and you have like a negative chi effective for the intrinsic system, but then the negative effect the anti-aligns make it how to say the in spiral like just accelerates the in spiral a little bit. So then you just see few seconds, and then when you recover the data, you tend to guess.
We're eating into the reception, which nobody wants to.
Yeah, we can maybe ask in person.
Let's take all the speakers again.